From WXXI News, this is Healthy Friday. Thanks for joining us for this hour of Healthy Friday. You're listening to us, of course, on WXXI, on WEOS in Geneva, and on WXXI.org. Or you might have us on your mobile app today. In any case, we're glad you're with us. Once a month, we take some time out from Connections with Evan Dawson to talk about health and medical issues on this program. And today we're going to talk about feet and ankles. The bottoms of our legs are really important. We can be bothered by foot and ankle problems both as a result of aging and also as a result of disease and medical conditions. And we're going to talk about that today with two healthcare providers. Our telephone number, if you'd like to participate or if you have a question or a comment, is 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Feel free to give us a call. We'll get your question on the air. Today we have with us a couple of healthcare providers, as promised. David High is with us. He's a podiatrist at Metro Foot Care Associates. And Amy Cates is also here, an RN and a nurse navigator at Unity Foot and Ankle Center. Now, we actually, both Amy and Dr. High are associated with Unity Foot and Ankle Center. It's a virtual foot and ankle center where foot and ankle problems are treated, and Dr. High is one of the physicians that's referred from the Foot and Ankle Center at Unity. So that's why they are here with us today to answer your questions. And because we're right in the thick of summer here, let me start right off with a shoe question. One hyphenated word, because I see them everywhere, especially now that they're fashionable. Flip-flops. Thumbs up or thumbs down, Dr. High?
Well, it depends on when you're wearing them and how often you wear them. Okay. Certainly flip-flops as shower shoes are excellent around a pool where you're not going to be on your feet too extensively. But people are certainly wearing them longer than they ought to, walking more distances than they should. And we're seeing a lot of problems this summer from that.
Okay. So problems such as?
Plantar fasciitis is the first one. It's one of the most common ailments we see during the summer months. And I had a young lady in just 2 days ago that walked all around Chicago in flip-flops, and 3 weeks later, she's still having a lot of pain.
Okay. So plantar fasciitis, that's a problem with the muscle along the bottom of the foot, correct? Is it related to support? Is that the idea?
Yeah. So the plantar fascia is a ligament that extends along the bottom of the foot, and it essentially helps hold up the arch. The arch is where we have essentially a bag of bones, which is our foot. It's 26 small bones, and the ligament that crosses the bottom to hold it is the plantar fascia. If it becomes strained, children will often be developing pain in their arches, but as adults get pain, it's often towards the heel, and it's also associated with heel spurs.
Okay, and the person that came in and had this result of flip-flops is because flip-flops they're flat? Is that the idea? What's the problem?
She was wearing the inexpensive flip-flops that have absolutely no arch support.
Okay, so flip-flops are flat. A lot of summer shoes are flat. A lot of sandals are flat. So should we just forget it, put the sneakers on, and just wear them everywhere?
Absolutely not. There are so many options out there now for supportive sandals. My daughter has a pair. She thinks they're flip-flops. They're actually made by Clark. They have great support in them, and so she's happy with the way they look. I'm happy with what she's wearing. There's so many stores that have that type of shoe that has support. It's also better, instead of a complete flat type of flip-flop, something with a small wedge is going to actually give more support than the traditional flat sandals that have no support whatsoever.
Right. I remember when I was a kid, the flip-flops were like the rubber flip-flops, and you only wore them around water because they could be in the pool or in the water or whatnot. Now they're very stylish. I imagine, Amy Cates, that you must see a lot of people wearing a lot of different kinds of shoes. What do you say to people? Do you immediately go to their shoes when they have problems? And can we really make that much difference by changing our shoes?
You know, that's a great question, and I do ask people what type of footwear they're wearing when they call and complain of foot pain. And making a change in your footwear can help make a big difference in terms of the support of your foot. I always ask, too, if somebody has a flat foot or a high arch, because that makes a difference in the type of footwear that they need.
Do people know that answer? I mean, I know my blood pressure, I know my blood glucose level, I know my cholesterol, but I cannot tell you what kind of a foot I have.
Well, it's easy to tell you, it's easy to say to somebody, just take your shoe off and step on the ground. If the middle of your foot hits the ground, you have a flatter foot. If you can see that arch, then you have a higher, or you may have a neutral, normal arch, but then I at least know you have an arch in your foot versus a flat foot. So it's easy enough to tell.
All right. One of the other things that we like about warm weather is walking around barefoot, you know, whether it's around the house or the yard or, you know, just being able to be out without your shoes on, outside of the concern of stepping on something sharp. Is walking barefoot really bad for us, Dr. High?
I would say around your house, it's probably fine. The same problem with the flip-flop is there's essentially no arch support there. A lot of times we treat people in the summer months for ailments such as plantar fasciitis, et cetera, and provide the right support, they get better, and then I see them back in the office in January after they've been walking around their house barefoot in the winter months because they don't have any kind of support in their homes. So, you know, if you're not having any problems with your feet and you're barefoot and you like to be barefoot, it's probably not a problem. But as soon as you start to have some issues, that's one of the first things to look at.
So when somebody's having an issue, you just mentioned that after a few months of walking around the house, somebody can be affected. Mm-hmm. If you're having a foot problem or if you have an arch support problem, is it really that important to watch it that closely? Do you really have to watch what's going on your feet and where you're walking and the kinds of surfaces you're on all the time?
Not all the time. You know, we put people in various types of shoes and orthotics and things as such, and it's all moderation. It's wear good sneakers with good support when you're going for that 3-mile walk, mm-hmm. and then you'll be able to go out to dinner tonight and wear some shoes that you like. And, you know, if you're putting most of your miles on your feet with good support, you can get away at other times with different types of shoes or even barefoot.
All right. So you may be getting questions, both of you, about seasonal issues. But overall, Amy Cates, what's the number one reason people come to see you or call?
Foot pain.
Pain.
Number one reason is foot pain.
How does it get described to you?
Foot pain.
Okay.
You know, basically, I try to tease out of that where in the foot it hurts, what they're doing that makes it hurt. Is it actually coming from their foot or coming from someplace else? You know, oftentimes people can have back problems and have sciatica, which can manifest itself in some folks as foot pain. So, I mean, we really have to have a conversation that teases out what they do that causes the pain, what the pain actually feels like. You know, is it numb? Is it tingly? So it's more than just they say pain. But I get a lot more information out of them just from that one word.
And it sounds like what you're saying is people, if they're having foot problems, really need to pay attention to their own medical history. That you probably need to get a history because you're looking up from the body, even if you're dealing with the foot. Is that accurate?
Well, I tend to look at it as I'm looking down to the foot. Actually,
as a destination.
I thought of start from the top and work my way down.
Okay.
Because we are a virtual center, I'm not actually seeing that patient. Patients call into the Unity Foot and Ankle Center, and they get me on the phone, and the goal is for me to be able to listen to them and understand their symptoms and sort of tease out what the problem is and then get them to the right provider, whether it's Dr. High, one of our podiatrists, or whether we go to one of our orthopedic surgeons.
Okay, our phone number is 844-295-TALK. 844-8255 is the last four, are the last four numbers. 844-295-8255 is our phone number. If you have a question for Dr. High or for Amy Cates about foot health or foot problems or ankle problems, for that matter, from the Unity Foot and Ankle Center, feel free to call us. We have a telephone caller on the phone right now. Let's take this call from Rich. Hi, Rich. Thanks for calling today.
Yeah, hi. How you doing? You know what? I have to ask doctors, what are their opinions on the minimalist shoe. I find that I'm a bigger guy, and I find that sometimes there's too much cushions in most of the running and walking shoes, and the cushioning itself breaks down and makes the foot unstable. And I find that I have to go to a minimalist type shoe to get the stability.
Dr. High?
So this is... It's a good question. It's rather controversial right now. I do see a lot of runners in my office, and I have had a few runners who have basically a rectus or that neutral foot type who have increased their miles with these types of shoes, and we've started to see some problems. I myself, with the mechanics that I understand, I'm not a big fan of that theory. I do believe that we do have some excellent stores here in Rochester for runners, and that they are extremely helpful in getting people fitted for the right type of shoe.
So, Rich, when you talk about a minimalist shoe, you're talking about these things that kind of look like our feet. They're not typical running shoe.
where there's separate toes, but I'll use something like a Vibrant. And I know I need the arch support, but I find that when I go with your most popular running shoe, the heel, especially the heels, there's too much cushion in them, and there's not enough support. So I find that they break down much quicker, and because I'm bow-legged, you end up with pronation issues and stuff. But I find that those kind of shoes aren't that good. And I'm trying to find that sweet spot of a shoe that gives you really good support on your arch, but there's not so much cushion that it breaks down. And then also sometimes they have too much cushion in the back heel and they push you forward. There's so many little things that I've noticed.
Okay, so Rich is bringing up a lot of different issues.
Right, and that is one of the true problems with trying to find the correct running shoe today without going to somebody who is very knowledgeable, because they do vary so much. And often when you actually go into the higher line of shoes and spend more money, they become even more specialized. And if it's not correct for what you're looking for, you can actually have the problems that you have. My 13-year-old daughter ran track this year, and I took her down to a shoe store, and I had her fitted, because although I talk about feet all day long, I don't know the most modern changes with the shoes this year, and they keep changing them constantly.
The issue with the minimalist shoes, I mean, it's a pretty big area right now. There are a lot of runners and walkers even using minimalist shoes, and what Rich is referring to is just what, you know, his particular needs. You're not a fan, but can you see the upside too, or how does that work?
For running, I don't really see an upside to that type of shoe. I do believe that you would be able to find the right running shoe that would provide what you're looking for if you're talking to somebody who is skilled enough to help you find that shoe.
All right. It sounds like, though, that people have a lot of things to consider. I mean, I myself just walk in and buy sneakers, right? Or even though I run, I just buy whatever I like. Maybe I like the color. Maybe it feels good on my foot. And in one moment, what should we consider when we're looking for shoes, especially to exercise in or to spend a lot of time walking around in?
Well, for walking in general, I do like a good running shoe. But as we were talking before about the pronated or the flat foot, and there's the supinated or the high arch foot, whole different set of issues. Certain brands like Nikes tend to be better for that narrow high arch foot where you're looking for more support. If you have a flatter foot, they will actually be very, very uncomfortable. And if you're just looking for a general purpose shoe, you're not having problems, you can get away with that lower level that you can find at a reasonable cost. But as soon as your body starts to tell you that, you know, something's not right, it's time to actually be fitted by somebody who knows what they're doing.
All right, and let's ask Amy about that. When your body's telling you that something's not right, is that's usually going to manifest itself in pain? Are people usually injured by the time they get to calling you, or can you really catch things in an early stage?
It's interesting. Some folks do call us with questions about running and footwear before they've had a lot of problems. And at the Foot and Ankle Center, we have partnered with a couple of different commercial partners.
Like retailers
mm-hmm. that we use specifically to work these problems out. Now, one of them is a great place where they have a lot of running and walking problems, and they're very knowledgeable about the different types of shoes for different activities. You know, one particular shoe may be good for one activity, but not for another. And that kind of information is what a lot of people find that they need. And they're also great at fitting these shoes and putting orthotics, some over-the-counter type orthotics, in the shoes to help. They have a sort of a gait trainer where people can actually walk or run right on it, and they can evaluate their gait and see where their foot hits the ground and where the pressure points of that individual's foot is. So they're pretty sophisticated. It's not like going to a big box store or just a sports store that has a variety of things. These folks are experts at it.
All right, we're talking with people from the Unity Foot and Ankle Center today. It's a virtual center. We'll talk about that in a moment. Amy Cates is the person that you've been listening to. She's an RN there and a nurse navigator. She helps people get where they need to go when they have foot and ankle problems. And David High is with us, too, a podiatrist from Metro Foot Care Associates. They work in partnership with the Foot and Ankle Center. The issue of shoes is a big issue for people, and we talked a little bit about summer shoes, but there are a lot of other things related to foot health. that I can imagine you must work either in partnership with other physicians or work with patients on your own. There are a lot of very common foot and ankle problems. Amy's been talking about pain. What are the other kinds of things that people should be careful of, maybe things that are more related to diseases or conditions that can affect our feet that we may not even realize?
Well, we were talking earlier about sometimes people present with pain in their feet, and it's actually coming from their back or higher up. My wife actually, 3 out of our 4 kids, when she was pregnant, she had horrible foot pain that I couldn't help her with because it was coming from her back. Mm-hmm. Other systemic conditions, we treat a lot of people with rheumatoid arthritis, other types of underlying inflammatory conditions. We quickly try to assess if the pain is more mechanical, and that's when we can often, with stretching support, proper shoes, and the use of anti-inflammatories, get their pain improved. But sometimes it actually is a systemic condition, and we have to go further and possibly refer them on to a rheumatologist.
Foot's pretty complex. It's a complex, you know, like our hand, it's a pretty complex part of our body. Can you describe how it sort of works in concert? What's in there? There's a lot of bones, right? There are a lot of muscles.
Yeah. So there's 26 bones plus or minus. There's variations, but people don't think much about their feet until they have a foot problem.
That's true.
And then you realize it's a very small structure that's able to be, you know, abused our entire lives. We can stand or run and jump. The foot structure as an arch is dynamic in that it's able to lock and unlock. And these terms pronation and supination that we hear, people start to believe that pronation is a bad word because that's when our foot flattens out. But actually, as we step down, our foot is supposed to pronate. That's what absorbs shock. It unlocks the foot so that it can be a good shock absorber and flexible enough so we get our footing.
And by pronate, you mean
turn down so it kind of flattens out a little bit.
Toward the inside a little bit.
Mm-hmm. That's the natural contact phase of gait. That's where we're absorbing the shock. People with really high arches, they walk very heavy because they don't pronate, and they develop different issues. And then the foot resupinates before we start to push off, and at that point, this loose bag of bones locks back into a rigid arch, and it allows us to propel forward. And that action goes on with every single step that we take, and when it's working properly, it's pretty amazing of what the foot can do for us.
How is it related to our neurology? The foot. I mean, these activities. I mean, it's getting muscles, getting signals from the brain, and the muscles and ligaments are moving it pretty much like everything else.
Yeah, the way that the foot functions. Often, if a person has certain issues, they're like, "Well, should I try to walk this way?" I'm like, "No. Right. Do not try to change the way you walk. Our cerebellum is controlling how we walk." You know, I just saw is it Sony? Or there's a new robot out that can do more things. And as complicated as gait is, there's still no robot that can walk as fluidly as we can, let alone dance or play basketball or anything like that. Our cerebellum is monitoring various things and muscle fibers twitching that we don't even realize are happening.
All right. So you just said that we don't pay enough attention to our feet. And we talked about things like gait pronation, supination. What should we know? If I should know my blood pressure number, what should I know about my feet and my ankles as a patient or as a healthcare consumer?
As a patient or before you're a patient?
Before I'm a patient. What should I be keeping an eye on?
You know, we treat a lot of kids also, and there's certain parts of development that are normal where kids are a little knock-kneed at certain times and bow-legged, and, you know, some flat feet are normal. But, you know, I use the term God gave us pain because he loves us. And so, again, pain is a really good indicator that something is not right. If you see your child has not just a regular flat foot, but really, really rolling out a lot, you might even want to have it looked at before they complain of pain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in a young person, do the shoes that they wear make a difference in how they're going to develop a gait or not really?
They play a role. You're not going to go buy very expensive shoes and change the genes that are in there. You know, mom or dad gave them the feet that they're going to have.
Okay. Let's take a telephone call now. Our phone number is 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. We have Kristen on the line in Rochester. Hi, Kristen. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. This is Kirsten.
Kirsten, forgive me.
I work at the hospital and do a lot of walking. And my question is about, I find that when I'm under a lot of stress, I tend to clench up my toes a lot repeatedly. Over and over to the point, you know, that I'll kind of wear out the sole of my foot where the big toe is. I think it's kind of a nervous tic, and I don't even realize that I'm doing it. And, I mean, I even tried putting duct tape on my foot to kind of try to stop myself from doing it. I'm wondering if you have any recommendations for that.
Well, often when a person is contracting their toes more, it is because of a lack of stabilization. It's actually called flexor stabilization, where if the foot is pronating and it's unstable, the toes will actually start to curl to provide more stability for the foot. That may be what's going on. Also, sometimes if you have excessive tightness in your calves, that will cause more pronation. So the first thing I would look at is to make sure that you're flexible enough. You might benefit from some stretching exercises and make sure you have enough support since you're on your feet so much.
Kirsten,
okay.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Okay. If you'd like to call back in, Kirsten, you certainly could have gone on. Did not mean in any way to cut you off. Our phone number is 844-295-TALK, 295-8255. We're talking about foot and ankle problems today. And Dr. High, you just mentioned stretching exercises or perhaps, you know, understanding what kind of situation your feet are in all day. Maybe people that are on their feet all day do realize that. But those of us that aren't, we don't really think about what we're doing with our feet or how we're using them all day. Is that the case, Amy? You find that people don't know?
Yeah, the most people that we talk to at the Foot and Ankle Center are folks that are on their feet a lot and do spend a lot of time in either improper footwear, poorly fitting footwear. You know, it's interesting. We always think that our feet are the same size that they've always been once we reach adulthood.
But they're not?
They're not.
Okay. How does that work?
Our feet actually, as we age, our feet start to flatten a little bit, they get a little wider, and they also may get a little longer. So it's really important when you go to buy shoes that you get your foot size measured, because just because you were a 7.5 in college doesn't mean you're going to be a 7.5 10 years, 20 years later. And I think that people do get it stuck in their head that that's my shoe size, every shoe that I get should be that size.
In terms of people getting shoes, I'm not sure that it's just that I'm older or the world's changed. But I remember as a kid, you know, there was a big deal around buying shoes. There wasn't a doctor involved, but there were all kinds of contraptions on my feet, and there was a big process related to getting shoes that were the right size and that fit well. Has that sort of thinking with families gone by the wayside? I mean, I haven't done that as an adult ever.
It sort of has, because we shop differently. We shop on the internet. We go to the department store and we get shoes there. There aren't a lot of shoe stores that just do that. I mean, I've spent years convincing my husband that I need frequent, expensive shoes. And, you know, it's hard to do when there aren't a lot of shoe stores out there. So
I think it is a health issue. That's good to know.
It is. I'm an expert. That's why it works. But I do think that it's very hard now. Families buy shoes on the internet. And, you know, if they fit okay, they'll probably keep them rather than send them back and get a shoe that's been professionally sized and fit for them.
All right, our phone number is 844-295-8255, 844-295-TALK. Let's take one more phone call before we go to the break. Renee's on line one. Thanks for calling, Renee. Go right ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question regarding foot cramps. And so what causes them, and what should you do when you get them? I tend to try to walk them off, but it is quite painful, and it seems to happen on only one foot. But I'm just wondering if you can share some information about foot cramps.
Dr. High?
So foot cramps can be caused from various issues. One, usually it's mechanical. It is an issue, going back once again, of support and stretching. If your foot is pronating excessively, there are four layers of muscles in your foot, and those muscles will be working harder than they're supposed to, and that will cause them to cramp. Other issues, if you're older or possibly have poor circulation, if you have cramping at night or cramping in your calves, that's more indicative of possibly a circulatory issue.
Circulatory issues. So mm-hmm. So that's why is it at night? Because we're at rest, we're not moving around,
absolutely.
So the blood isn't getting where it needs to go?
Absolutely.
Can you sleep in a different position or do something to keep it
often
moving?
Often those people come in and say, I have to get up and walk around to get rid of the cramping, and that's what does it for them. And we send them right out for vascular tests to see what's going on with the circulation.
All right, Renee, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking with David High today, a podiatrist at Metro Foot Care Associates, and Amy Cates, an RN and a nurse navigator at Unity Foot and Ankle Center. We're going to take a short break and be right back with more of your calls and your questions. You're listening to member-supported public radio, AM 1370 and FM 91.5 HD2 in Rochester, or FM 89.5 in the Finger Lakes. We'll be right back. Coming up in our second hour, it's another edition of Second Opinion Live. Listen on the radio and get on the computer for a live video webcast with me and Dr. Timothy Quill. The subject is medical marijuana. You can tweet your comments and call in your questions. It's all coming up in our second hour on Connections.
Hey Rochester, this is Tariq from the WDKX Wake Up Club Water Cooler. This week marks the 50th anniversary of the riots in Rochester. And WDKX and WXXI are joining forces together for a special simulcast Thursday morning, 9 o'clock for the Water Cooler, to discuss the problems and issues back then and how they relate to what we're dealing with today. Join in on the discussion Thursday, July 24th with WXXI and 103.9 WDKX.
And thanks for joining us for Healthy Friday today. I'm Elisa Orlando. Once a month, we take a break from Connections with Evan Dawson. He'll be back on Monday, of course. And this day, we're going to talk about health and medical issues related to feet and ankles and the problems that can be caused and the conditions that cause problems with our feet and with our ankles. We have David High in the studio with us today, a podiatrist from Metro Foot Care Associates. That organization works in close contact with the Unity Foot and Ankle Center. And from the Foot and Ankle Center, we have Amy Cates, a nurse navigator and RN in the studio. They're here ready to take your calls and questions. You might not think about your feet or your ankles very often. That's what we're learning today. But this is the time to take a minute, think about it, and give us a call if you have a question or a comment. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-TALK. 8255 is the number to call. We've been talking about issues related to shoes and issues related to summer shoes, but let's get into some a little bit more serious issues. When people have sometimes very serious illnesses, that can also affect illnesses and conditions can affect our foot health. Diabetes, I think, is the one that comes to mind for most people. What's the relationship, Dr. High, between a diagnosis of diabetes and problems with your feet? And I know that when people get diagnosis of diabetes, there's a lot to think about all of a sudden. And maybe, again, our feet are not on the top of that list. So can you tell us what's going on when you get that diagnosis?
Sure. So diabetics probably represent 30 to 40% of my practice and who I see every day. With diabetes, and particularly, I should say, as diabetes, if it's running high and not well controlled, we start to see certain systems in the body affected. We know the eyes and the kidneys can be affected. But the circulation is also one of the major issues. And the vessels at the end of your toes or the extremities are the smallest vessels. And if you think about it, as far from your heart as they can possibly be. So one of the biggest concerns is the poor circulation in diabetics. When you don't have good circulation, it's difficult for your body to heal or fight infection. And so those patients are prone to possibly developing serious infections that are difficult to control.
So they may have something wrong with their foot that they don't feel?
Well, that's the next step. So the two parts of diabetes and the effects on the feet, circulation, number one, and then the nerves. It's called diabetic neuropathy. And as the nerves get affected, they can reach a point where they're simply not able to feel things. We've had people come into our office with a thumbtack in their foot, something lodged in their foot. They don't know about it. And obviously, if you can't feel something, by the time you realize that something is wrong, it's probably very wrong. If you combine the two of those together, poor circulation and neuropathy, often by the time they realize there's something going on, we're not going to be able to actually fight that infection to get that healed up.
So you're worried about something not necessarily related to diabetes in terms of a health issue, but the idea that diabetes has caused something that's going to make an infection that could be, if you can't clear up an infection, that could be
right. It's for the feet, it can be devastating of the scenario with those of the infections that can occur and how difficult they are to try to heal.
Does diabetic neuropathy have pain with it, associated with it, or not really?
That's a great question. You can be very painful and numb at the same time. You know, it's one of those terms the patient will say, call me crazy because it hurts and it's numb. There's different levels, early neuropathy, maybe a little tingling. It can progress to the point where it can be unbelievably painful. and then it can go on to the point where they have no sensation whatsoever.
So people with diabetes have to address that pain. How what is the treatment for the pain part of it? And then I assume awareness is the best treatment for
right.
the tingling.
Well, the first thing we want to do is educate them to try to keep their A1Cs down so they don't develop neuropathy, because we really can't bring those nerve signals back.
You can't reverse it.
We can't. We are able to treat the pain pretty effectively. There's various medications now that we can treat the pain. But if it's more that the numbness or that uncomfortable feeling with the neuropathy, we don't have a lot of great options for them.
All right. Our phone number is 844-295-TALK, 295-8255. We're taking your calls and questions about foot health. Amy Cates is also in the studio with us, in addition to Dr. High. Amy, when people call and start to give you information about their foot problems, do you ask them about diabetes? And I'm sure you, if Dr. High has much of his practice with diabetes patients, you must also hear from them.
Yes, quite frequently. I always ask if someone's diabetic, and then I always ask if they have a callus or a sore or anything on their foot that they may not feel or be unaware of. Folks that have bad peripheral neuropathy from diabetes often get calluses on their foot just from, you know, repeated shoe problems. And what's important about that is that may look like a callus on the top, but as we look underneath the layers of that callus, there may be an actual sore underneath that. And those are very, very difficult to heal. And it's important that those folks get in to see somebody right away.
That's why we try to be proactive and identify these problems and make adjustments as necessary, sometimes special shoes or inserts to take pressure off these areas to prevent these from breaking down and ulcerating.
All right, and if you have a diagnosis, you have to use your eyes, right, if you can, to look at your
feet,
right?
Absolutely. We do a nerve test every time somebody comes in, and if we do know they have neuropathy, we want somebody looking at those feet every single day.
All right, our phone number is 844-295-8255. We have a telephone call from Bill. Hi, Bill. Thanks for calling.
I had a sports injury, a broken ankle 30 years ago, and they had to do ankle reduction surgery at the time. And the surgeon told me that I'll probably have arthritis later in life, and as I mentioned, it was 30 years ago. So right now I'm only able to treat it with a topical cream, and it's quite painful most of the time. So I'm wondering, it has been diagnosed as arthritis, and if there's any brace or anything I can do in addition to the topical cream. I'd rather not have the foot fused, which I guess is an option down the road.
Hi, Bill. This is Amy. Yeah, post-traumatic arthritis is sort of what you're describing, arthritis that develops after a fracture. Your fracture sounds like it was severe enough that it went into the joint, and that's where that arthritis comes from. As that progresses and you get sort of at the end of your options, an ankle fusion is an option, and in some folks, an ankle replacement becomes an option. Have you seen an orthopedic surgeon about the ankle?
I have not. I've seen my GP, and we're treating with a topical cream for now. I mean, I can live with it, but it gets worse and worse, every month.
Sure. Well, I'd be happy to help you. It's important that you get it x-rayed and find out how severe the arthritis is and whether you do need some sort of support for it or if you're a candidate for any type of reconstructive or corrective surgery.
All righty, I'll do that.
Thanks for the call, Bill. We appreciate it. Again, our phone number is 844-295-8255. You're listening to Healthy Friday, and I'm Elisa Orlando. Amy Cates just mentioned reconstructive surgery. Bill, who had the problem, mentioned surgery to fuse, and you talked about an ankle replacement. I can imagine, Dr. High, that the surgical techniques in place and the techniques to treat problems with ankles and feet are much advanced from what they used to be. What's on the horizon? What do you see that's working for people?
For
ankle problems, for foot problems. I've heard of toe replacements, for example. I mean, things that we never had before.
We have artificial joints for the big toe joint. It's actually come a long way in the last 10, 15 years. The technology is very similar to what they're using in hips and knees. Ankle joint replacement is actually, I would say that's on the horizon. It's certainly not being done as much as other joints that we've seen, but the technologies continue to improve. Actually, the braces have improved significantly also. The braces just 10 or 15 years ago were rather uncomfortable, very limited. The podorthists that actually help make these now are able to do a variety of things to help maintain some motion of the joint, but maybe take pressure off of certain areas so that they function better.
Is there a good chance if people have an injury, Amy, as Bill just described, that they're going to end up with some kind of arthritis? I mean, the bones on the foot are pretty small, so...
Well, the severity of that injury helps dictate what's going to happen in the future. Simple fractures that don't involve the joint, we don't really necessarily see a lot of post-traumatic arthritis in. But when you have a fracture that goes into the joint, there's the whole healing process, and then the constant motion of that joint helps contribute to that arthritis forming. And those folks, you can get some pretty significant arthritis. The ankle fusion has always been sort of the gold standard operation for end-stage ankle arthritis. New now are the ankle replacements, and as the technology for the actual implant has gotten better and better, we're starting to see this procedure done more and more. So really, it's an important consultation with a foot and ankle specialist that's going to help determine if either of those operations the person's a candidate for.
You know, as we talk about all these 26 bones and the structure of the ankle and the foot, I'm thinking about osteoporosis. We talk about osteoporosis, especially women, related to all kinds of things that can break if we fall. But is osteoporosis a problem for our feet and ankles as well? I assume it is, but what should we be thinking about?
Well, I think that important for us, even in the Rochester area and other areas, is for women, depending on some of the medications that they take, that they have their vitamin D level drawn and they get vitamin D replacement, even though areas where there's sun a lot of the year, those folks are also found to be vitamin D deficient. So it's important to see either your primary care physician or a metabolic bone specialist that can help you with determining that diagnosis and what type of treatment you need.
We're testing for vitamin D routinely now, especially for our surgical patients. Absolutely. And it's amazing. We have young people whose vitamin D is unbelievably low, and that will definitely inhibit the rate of their healing. You know, for people with osteoporosis or osteopenia, softening of the bones, one of the things that we will see clinically is an increased chance of stress fractures in the foot.
Right.
And if a stress fracture by itself, we don't get too concerned about, but if they start to develop multiple stress fractures repeatedly, then yes, endocrinologists, you know, they need to be worked up further to see if there's something else that needs to be done.
If there's some problems with the bone, osteoporosis or apnea. Mm-hmm. All right, our phone number is 844-295-TALK. Let's take a call from Keith. Thanks for calling today, Keith. Did you have a question?
Yes, I did. Thank you very much. Work in a manufacturing environment, industrial area where I'm on my feet anywhere from 8, 10, 12 hours a day on a concrete floor. Many times people who are new working with us often comment on, you know, why so many of us have such a bad gait. You know, many people who've been there for 10, 20 years, you know, they have a limp, if you will. Their gait is really off. So we've had many discussions amongst ourselves as to what's the best type of footwear for that type of environment where you're working, as I say, where you're on your feet most of the time on a concrete floor. Is it better to have a good athletic shoe or a good hiking boot?
Good question.
Dr. Yes, Hyde? If it's a type of environment where you're not concerned about the protection of a boot, as far as items of certain weight falling, I do think the athletic shoes are about the best. And one of the things about the newer athletic shoes is while they're designed to look neat with all the different colors and mesh and everything, they're actually designed to breathe. And when you're walking in those types of shoes, they're designed to actually help air come in and out of the shoe itself. If you're in an environment where you need the protection of a boot, though, hiking boots are a good alternative. And I still think Red Wing makes an excellent boot for that type of environment, especially if you need a steel toe or if you're in an environment where you're going to be bending a lot and you need a steel shank so you don't have excessive pressure across the ball of your foot.
The protection infection is not so much the issue. I guess primarily we're concerned about, you know, what we can do to preserve ourselves for, you know, trying to make it to retirement in a healthy fashion.
Yes.
Do they have those pads that you can stand on in front of, like if you're a machinist working at a machine all day, they're those cushioned rubber pads?
Yes, they do have the ergonomic pads if you're on the machine, but there's another, say, 50% of us who are not on the machines, or you're actually you're walking around from one operation to the next, and so therefore, you know, you're walking a lot on this concrete floor.
Yeah, a good athletic shoe will have probably the best shock absorption on the concrete floor in an environment like that.
So is there anything that Keith and his colleagues can do outside of the footwear to sort of keep their feet healthy or their gait in check? Is there stretching? Are there other things that they could do, especially because he mentioned surface? If you have to work or walk on a concrete surface a lot, or your job makes it so that it's going to be tough on your feet and ankles, are there things that we can do like, you know, that will prevent?
No, I do preach stretching all day long.
Stretching?
It is, for adults, I'd say 40 and over, probably half of them when they come in, stretching is a part of the solution for them mechanically.
What kind of stretching? I don't know that I've ever stretched my foot.
No, particularly, our calf muscles will often tend to tighten up for people, especially if they're standing a lot. At certain ages, maybe we're not as active as we used to be. Our muscles will tighten up even more. And when you have the muscles in the back of your leg pulling excessively on the back of the foot, it generates a lot of stress. So stretching is important. I'd say also, if you're going to start a program of exercise, do yourself a favor. Stretch right from the beginning and go get fitted for good shoes.
Okay. Does muscle strengthening play a role here? If you strengthen your, I don't know, quads, hamstrings, low back, calves, whatever, the front, does that play a role in any of this?
It can certainly play a role. And if somebody's gait is really abnormal, I'll often have them see a physical therapist to have a complete evaluation of their lower extremities to see if there's weaknesses. But more often, it's not a weakness that we're dealing with. It's a tightness that we're dealing with, especially for as the population ages.
All right, Amy Cates, when you have people call you or when you talk to people about their problems, do you recommend these things right away or do you tend to refer out? Tell me a little bit about how the Foot and Ankle Center works. There's no particular place that it lives. It's virtual, right?
Right. So I'm in an office, but we don't see patients in that actual office. So when I talk to folks, I'm fortunate that in addition to the podiatrist and orthopedic surgeon that works with us at the Foot and Ankle Center, we have physical therapy. We have a podorthist who does specialized bracing and orthotics. And we have our commercial partners for our athletes or runners and anybody who really needs a good shoe fitting. So I usually do refer to my colleagues on a lot of this. If it's something that I can simply have a quick conversation with somebody, I do. But for the most part, I think a thorough evaluation by one of these providers really is worth that appointment.
All right. There are many foot problems that don't seem to be that serious, but they can be a nuisance, and I suppose they can get serious. I'm talking about things like corns, calluses, you know, things that aren't too pleasant to talk about, fungus, those kinds of things. How often do people call in and want to discuss things like that? And what should we be paying attention to in terms of more serious health issues down the line?
Well, when you talk about corns and things like that are sort of unsightly, a lot of that is shoe fitting. And when we talk about calluses, we're really, again, it could be the shoe fitting, and then I'm always thinking in the back of my mind, is this person a diabetic? Is this more than just a callus? So I do have a lot of those conversations with folks.
All right, Dr. High, what other kinds of conditions or diseases besides diabetes can have a big effect on your feet, and you really need to keep your feet and your lower body, your ankles, into account? Are there other diseases that people have to deal with later on, they have to deal with their feet?
You know, we talked a bit about some of the arthritic conditions, specifically like rheumatoid arthritis. Those often will manifest in the hands and the feet, and it can be quite significant. They can progress and cause some severe orthopedic deformities, which will lead to very bad calluses and corns. You know, with corns and calluses, often it is a shoe wear, and the first thing we do is make recommendations, and sometimes simple padding can be very, very effective. There are some cases, though, where you have an orthopedic deformity where you have one toe that's just sitting up so high it we need to do something about it, and there are surgical procedures to address things like that.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned stress fractures a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. Who's the best candidate for a stress fracture?
Well, it's interesting. You know, the old March fracture is what the 18-year-old boys would get when they went off to GI camp. You know, it's a fracture of the second metatarsal. It's an overuse injury. I would say probably one we see now is somebody in the 40s, 50s who decided they're going to start exercising, and they just try to plow right into it. And
overdo
they,
it?
They overdo it, yes.
You know. Okay. And what do you do for a stress fracture? Is it just rest?
So stress fractures, you know, if your foot becomes painful and swollen, have it checked immediately. We make the diagnosis primarily clinically. The initial x-rays will not show the stress fracture. If we see a fracture on that initial x-ray, it's a fracture, not a stress fracture. But what happens is people don't treat it properly, and the body tries to heal it, and then 4 or 6 weeks later, it's still hurting, it's still swollen. You know, then we take an x-ray, and we will see a halo where the bone is trying to heal that, and it's extra calcium building up there because it wasn't treated properly. So immobilization for a stress fracture right away, 3 or 4 weeks, it's usually better.
I have to say I know people that have had broken toes or stress fractures, and they just say, well, I'm not going to go to the doctor because they're not really going to do anything. I mean, your foot is not something with your with a cast, or there's not something that we tend to put. We don't see the treatment. So your hand up went up immediately.
I have to make a comment on this. So I ask people, if you think you broke your toe, get an x-ray. X-rays are very inexpensive. Like we were talking earlier about arthritis, most fractured toes will actually fracture in the shaft of the bone. Those are going to heal fine generally. But if it fractures into the joint and the joint is mangled, 3 or 4 months later, it's still going to be painful and swollen. And then if you come and get it looked at, then we have to treat that. And this became a 5 or 6 month process. And the other thing is people will come in and say, oh, there's nothing you can do, or, you know, just tape it to the other toe. I've had people come in taping their toes together. They're making it heal crooked because they don't know how it's fractured. So x-rays are inexpensive. They give us the information so that we can help this heal the best that it can.
But you're not necessarily going to splint a toe or put a cast on it, is that accurate?
Often the cast is not necessary, but often we will wrap it. There's a type of wrapping that will be very helpful to stabilize that, to make it heal faster. Mm-hmm. There are some cases where we will actually have you splint it to the other toe. It will make it heal faster. I mean, we want these to heal as quickly and nicely as possible, and an x-ray will give us the information of how to do that.
Amy Cates, is that the kind of call you get? Somebody says, I broke my toe, I don't know what to do, or do you maybe not get that call because people think they know?
I'm going to guess it's that they don't call us about that. I haven't gotten a lot of calls about toe injuries or toe fractures. And, you know, our toes, which don't seem like they're that important, are actually very important, particularly our great toe and our gait and our ability to walk properly. Mm-hmm. So if somebody injures that, it is important that they give us a call so we can get them in to one of our providers. Just like Dr. High said, they can get an x-ray and find out what's actually going on.
We hear also about, we hear the term hammer toes quite often. Can you describe that for me? What is that?
Hammer toes are a deformity that it almost looks like the toe sort of bends up and like a hammer would hit like the note, like a thing in a piano.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that makes they're very uncomfortable because they can often rub at the top, and they're often associated with other deformities of the foot, like a bunion deformity.
So are they genetic? Are they injuries? How do they have the shoes? How does it happen?
They can be genetic. They can be an injury. They can be from bad footwear.
Okay. And what will we how will you tend to treat that, Dr. High?
We would start with trying to see if we can alter shoe wear. Hammer toes, often they're flexible, so the toe is bent a bit, but you can straighten it out. Proper shoe wear and maybe some padding will be effective.
Is it painful?
They can be very painful, absolutely. Okay. And if they become rigid, so the toe is so rigidly fixed that it's going to rub up against any kind of reasonable shoe, then we're often looking at correcting those.
All right. Dr. High, your job as a podiatrist is mostly to take care of people when they have problems. And do you have people who just come to you because they want to have a specialty doctor for their foot? And is that a good idea? I mean, does everybody need a podiatrist at some point, or are there other things that we can do to keep our feet healthy so that we don't need to see you, besides the stretching, which you've already talked about?
You know, primarily the prevention component of my practice is the diabetics, you know, or people who have some type of systemic condition that will put them at high risk. And I have diabetics that I will check, and their sugar is under great control, their circulation's great, their nerves are fine. I'll see them in a year. We just do an annual check. They don't need to be seen constantly. Mm-hmm. For just preventative so that you don't end up in my office. Just being aware of your feet. And I keep going back to, you know, proper support, shoes, stretching. Stretching is so important if you want to maintain a high level of activity.
All right, Dr. David High is a podiatrist at Metro Foot Care Associates, and Amy Cates is an RN. She's a nurse navigator with the Unity Foot and Ankle Center, and Unity Foot and Ankle Center work together with Dr. High and his associates to help people with their feet. Thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it. That's all the time we have for this discussion. Before we leave today, I want to remind our listeners of another health-related event. It's going on tonight at the Little Theater in Rochester, part of the One Take documentary series. It's a screening of a film called Fed Up. This is the much-talked-about expose on food, government policies, and our health. And after the film, Dr. Stephen Cook and health nutrition practitioner Karen France will stay for a panel discussion on child obesity. That's all going on at 7 o'clock tonight at the Little Theater. And for more information, you can get that at thelittle.org. If you'd like to hear a podcast of this program, you can find it on our website, wxxi.org. And next hour, we'll be sorting out the medical properties of marijuana, with New York State signing on to use its medical settings. You get a chance to ask Dr. Timothy Quill whether he intends to prescribe it. It's part of a partnership with the WXXI show, Second Opinion, and it's ahead on Healthy Friday. I'm Elisa Orlando. We'll be right back after 1 o'clock, and we'll talk to you then.